The problem of low self-esteem is one that threatens most people at some time or another. Feelings of personal, pretty deep-seated anxieties about our own self-worth, how well we are measuring up to others, how adequately performing in the sack race of life, as against the high flyers, the seeming success stories. Within ourselves, we conduct a searching analysis and assessment, posing, posturing and pretending to disguise the insecurities and to cover up the uncertainties we feel about ourselves and how we're doing, whether or not we are okay. That concern was addressed in the classic book of popular psychology by Thomas Harris, I'm Okay, You're Okay, which sought to get to grips with the real need people have to accept themselves as worth something. For all around us, throughout our experience, there are insistent voices that threaten our personal vision of our own value, and people and situations arise which seem to say to us with bald and punishing frankness that we're not okay. The world of work is full of such pressures. When a person is passed over for promotion or the job application isn't even shortlisted, when we're told that we're going to have to be let go and the bottom crumbles out of our security, if you feel betrayed and worthless and dispensable, it represents a savage, ego-threatening moment when we seem to see all that we've contributed written off by someone with a calculator. We wonder what we're worth. We feel that in the eyes of those making the decisions, we are definitely not okay. While unemployment and its children, poverty, having to live in a ghastly ghetto somewhere, poor housing, activates that sense that by society's measures, the people involved at that end of the economic spectrum are reckoned to be not okay, or the sleek SUV drivers of London Docklands, success stories by the measures of society, they are okay. It's all there within the economic differentials. The people who from the earliest of days are labelled not okay by an education system that dismisses the non-academic as born to fail, and chronic low self-esteem becomes the mindset of those so designated. Indeed, the world of work exposes the vulnerability of our fragile egos and can make us feel very not okay. But even before we get that far, the effect and influence of parents and their expectations, the sometimes harsh world of family life, can be the arena in which the ego is put under pressure and self-esteem sinks lower and lower. Parental expectations that people don't fulfill, the exams that were not passed, the look of disappointment and disapproval, embarrassment, these are ingredients of many people's inner emotional life. And often, although there may be no word of criticism is actually offered, the sense that we've not measured up is implicit in the silent, unspoken verdict that leaves us feeling that even in the eyes of the people who are supposed to love us most and best, perhaps we're not okay. And people carry the scars of that sense of inadequacy with them into their adulthood. That's a tough and a lonely burden to have to carry. And it's in the sometimes contrary and confusing world of relationships that we find the most fertile soil for the growth of that sense of unworthiness, that diminished self-esteem. For it is in relationships that we're placed in situations of greatest vulnerability, and there that rejection and pain cut most deeply into us. When relationships fail, there's an almost overwhelming, crushing feeling of not having delivered, not having been good enough, and people agonise over the anguished question of where they went wrong and why their love wasn't big enough, their personality not sufficient to sustain that relationship. And they stop liking themselves, trusting themselves. Their confidence sinks to absolute rock bottom. Relationships that go sour and leave the individual disillusioned with themselves, doubting the value of their little life, if someone could cast them aside with such brutal indifference. And in the bleak shadow of that sense of feeling not okay, they are overwhelmed. Other relationships render us vulnerable too, for it's in relationships that criticism is expressed that can make us doubt our ability, our professionalism, our self-worth. The teacher badgered by angry parents, the doctor conned by a disappointed patient, the minister who's not fulfilled someone's expectations, the anger of the great British public when some mix-up has occurred. And faced with the barrage of criticism, we wonder if we have anything to contribute at all. It's a tough school out there, and relationships that might be expected to build us up and reassure us and affirm our significance often can have quite the opposite effect. And unfortunately, even the church can speak its message in such a way that it adds to the cacophony of voices that bring us down, that make us listen to an insistent chorus to our inadequacies and faults and limitations, that drill home the message that we're not okay. For by its sometimes judgmental and critical voice, its occasional talk of people being dead wood, its withering criticisms of nominal membership and bad givers and reluctant workers, the church can sound a condemnatory tone that makes us want to shrink into our shell for protection against the force of its attack. And our vision of ourself is rewritten in the light of these full frontal assaults on our ego. The barrage of reaction and criticism rocks our life and we want to hide. We find our confidence bruised and battered, shaken and eroded. We feel sad and unsure and wonder if anyone out there really understands us or likes us or thinks we're worth anything. And sometimes in face of this, people take a kind of refuge in an aggressive, defensive attitude that alienates them still further from real contact and warm relationships. They hide behind an angry veneer, aggressive, that pushes people away. They avoid relationships that make them vulnerable and take the view that we'll do it to them before they do it to us. And we've all met people like that along the way, hoping to hide their vulnerability and feelings of insecurity behind bluster and first strike criticism. If this is true, if this indeed is how it is for many, genuine anxieties as to whether they are okay, then the Bible's message is clear and unequivocal. You are okay. The whole thrust of the good news of the gospel is a declaration to each man and woman that they are at the deepest and most significant level okay. They are okay. You're okay. The Bible describes that dignified and significant status coming from a whole broad sweep of truths about God and his purposes. And it insists in the first instance that we're okay because we are wonderfully and purposefully made, created by God in the image of God, with capacities and possibilities so staggering and breathtaking, they make us so okay that God only ever makes one of us. And then the mould is thrown away. And we stand in the universe and in the great stream of human history as the one and only, the special, the rarest of the rare, what Kierkegaard describes so wonderfully as that meeting of time and eternity that will never be repeated, though the world should stand forever. That's you, that's me. Furthermore, in terms of the Bible's view of the individual, his or her worth, the value is unquestioned, for here is a God who takes a profound and personal interest in each one of us. The whole of creation, the Bible teaches, is for the benefit of men and women, so that they might learn and grow and come to the richness of life that God wills for them. All this, for little me, is a good response to the stars and the wonders of the world. And the Bible makes no bones about the fact that this is how it interprets the human situation, how it sees the life of each man and each woman, purposefully made to the highest specifications with the richest possibility. Not just the great and the famous and the rich, but every single one of us, personally overseen, personally wanted by God to share his creation and to find our true stature as his children. And we're okay because we're loved by God. This brings us to the core message of the Bible. If there is only one thing it wants us to understand about ourselves and about God, it is this, that he loves us with a love that won't fade or fail. And that all the sad inadequacies of the other loves we might encounter, but which are tainted by the sins and selfishness of other men and women, are a shadow of the depth of perfection of the love with which we are loved by God. He knows us to our boots and loves us without limit or condition or end. Wherever we go, we are enfolded by that and included in that. Prodigal son or stiff-hearted elder brother, we are still loved with equal passion and concern. The other loves of our life may fail us, But in this love, we are secure, and we can feel at peace in that. Here is someone who values our contribution, who seeks a real share in our story, who never leaves us nor forsakes us. The affirmation of such a love leaves us in no doubt that when the only assessment that really matters is made, namely God's reckoning, his verdict about our worth, the good news is that we are okay. And we're okay because we've been saved by Jesus Christ. This is the faith of the church, that by his life and death and resurrection, we are put right at the deepest, deepest level with God. And that, made clean and healed and restored by his victory, we're set free from the past that might hinder and haunt us, and brought into the light and joy of the released ones, the redeemed ones. And we are invited to boldly go into the presence of God because of Christ's triumph. In answer to the question, how can a sinner, someone whose motives are so uncertain, someone whose moral victories are so occasional, ever be able to feel good about themselves, feel right about themselves, knowing where the skeletons are in the cupboard and what the failures have been? How can someone like that ever feel at peace within themselves? The answer the Bible gives is that we have peace through Jesus Christ, who has wiped the slate clean and placed us in the position of freedom and forgiveness, so that at the basic level of our souls, we are right with God through him, the mistakes obliterated, the sins forgiven, the heart made new. His death and resurrection, the Bible insists, includes us, incorporates us, was for all the world and for all time. And under the shelter of that deliverance, we can stand tall and walk free and sing with gladness. And when the past challenges us, when the voices in our head taunt us, when our mistakes rise up to accuse us, we say, we're okay because Jesus has won the fight for us, done for us what we could never do, and gives us freely the fruits of his victory. And he has done all that because our little life counts for him, matters to him, and he will move heaven and earth and hell to sort out the mess. And we're okay because of him. It's not about how much we earn or what qualifications we manage to get, but about ourself, our life, our personality. So he considers us okay and wants to see us reach the full potential of spiritual men and women. That's all we need to know. We're okay because God takes our life seriously enough to desire to bring us to the full blossoming of our possibility.